This is 400 Thoughts. It's episode 4. Don't know what I'm going to call it yet. Figure that out towards the end once I figure out exactly what I'm talking about. Okay, well, I've heard recently a few politicians, and this isn't going to be a political podcast by any means, but a few things that I've heard from some of the candidates involved prison reform, criminal justice reform, and a few different candidates had said that they would like to remove 50%, not remove, but allow 50% or more people that are currently incarcerated to be released from prison. And I think it's interesting because a lot of people are really excited about that, but I'm not saying I'm not for people being free or anything like that, but I don't know why removing one out of two or more people from prison is a good thing or bad thing, because I don't know why those people are in prison. So if you were saying, you know, there's 10 people in prison, I would like to remove 5. My question for the candidate would be, okay, I've got 10 prisoners, you want to remove 5, pick them. You're the grand emperor of the world. There's 5 people in the prison, or there's 10. Which 5? You get to pick. And I think when you get to that, it gets a little sticky. I think it's a lot easier to say, I want to make things better for a lot of Americans. I want less people in our prison system. I want more people to be able to take part in society and focus more on like a restorative versus retributive justice system, where there's a difference between making someone pay for their crimes and focus on the punishment side versus how to fix a relationship between the victim and the person who committed the crime, the perpetrator. So I like that. I think that's fine. I think you can maybe do a bit of a mix between either one, but it's just kind of, it's frustrating when people have, I don't want to say it's frustrating. It's not really frustrating. It's interesting when somebody makes a bold statement like, I'm going to reduce the national debt by 50%, or I'm going to reduce the number of people in prison by 50%, or like one candidate said a few times, I'm going to reduce prescription medication prices by 50%. And then you get to the, okay, how? You get to the how question, and it gets a little, well, how dare you ask me how? You know, why are you such a pessimist? Why don't you want this to happen? I'd be fine with it happening. I just want to know, why do you think that would be a good thing? Well, prescription medication is going down half in price. That'd be a good thing, I mean, on its face, right? Because it means Americans wouldn't have to pay as much for maybe chronic conditions that require medication refills a lot. So that's easily a good thing. Now, how are you going to make the drug companies charge less? Like, it's a little trickier. Okay, let's go back to the prison system question. You've got, 2 million? I don't know the exact number. I'll put it in the show notes of the exact number, but you know, there's the argument that America has a higher percentage of its population compared to other countries, you know, I guess per capita, in the prison system or justice system overall, as far as like if they are released, they're on parole and whatnot. We've got more people that I guess we've identified as criminals than many other countries. We got more people that are locked in cages. Okay. Why are they locked in cages would be my first question. Why are these people put in prison? Well, that I think you should be able to ask that question. I think it should be okay and not a crazy person question. Like, I shouldn't think it would be weird to say, okay, we've got a million more people in our prison than a country comparable in size or larger. And I would say, okay, so what are these crimes? There are some people that have said, well, the majority of people that are put in prison are due to laws that should be off the books. So these are, the majority of people in prison are related to the war on drugs and whatnot. I saw this interesting debate, I think, a few years ago with Heather McDonald. I want to say it's Heather McDonald and Thaddeus Russell. in which she laid out that it's not actually true that the majority of people in prison are nonviolent offenders, that it's quite the contrary. And there was this really awkward moment in the debate where he said, "So I guess you're just going to ignore everything I said." And he kind of, I don't know, it felt like he was acting like a middle child, and I can say that because I'm a middle child, but it's like, you're not listening to me. You're not even listening to me anymore. I just said all these things, and you just kind of blew them all over. And I think if we're going to say there's 2 million people that we put in cages, and that's bad, and we should give liberty to 1 million people, we should maybe know why those people are in prison, and that's, I don't think that's an inappropriate question. And if we have 2 million people, and the majority of them, or say more than 50%, or at least 50% of them are in there for violent reasons, maybe we need to evaluate if that's who should stay in prison, or if we're okay with that, if we want to say, okay, we believe in forgiveness, we believe in, and those people maybe received a sentence that exaggerates the actual limit of the crime they committed. So comparing, say, somebody that committed murder to somebody that simply was maybe in a bar fight or an assault or whatnot, then maybe their sentence should be lessened. But I just think it's very interesting come kind of political race time, during political races, is these grand statements, and maybe even they have a document supporting it, but I'm not sure if the fundamental questions surrounding that you know, statement of I'm going to release 50% or more people from prison isn't just kind of a fun thing to say, and it's probably not going to happen, but it's a good thing to motivate people, I guess, to vote for you, which it's kind of crappy when you think about it. I mean, you shouldn't promise things you can't deliver on. You can actually earnestly believe that you are going to do it and not, you know, lie to people and say that this is actually one of your goals and try to do it. That's fine. But I don't really know if that's the case all the time when I'm listening to politicians. And a lot of them, like I remember in high school, in one of my government classes, the teacher, he's a very, very good teacher. He played this documentary with Richard Nixon when he was describing his campaign, and he talked about, I've got a plan for Vietnam, I've got a plan, I've got a plan, I've got a plan. And then he won the election, and later in an interview he said, I had no plan, but it got me into the White House. And it was like, well, okay, that's Richard Nixon, we should expect that. But I don't know if that's really quite different than just how politicians, you know, act in general, as they say so many things, and a lot of times, I mean, many politicians are some that are trying to get into to the White House or win a Senate seat. They'll say things that don't really make a lot of sense or sound fantastic. Like, I want everybody in America to have health care. I want everybody in America to have a house. I want everybody in America to have a college education. But some things just don't really make sense. So if you want everybody to be a homeowner, because homeownership is the surest way to build capital, not capital, net worth, or capital, I suppose, does everybody want to be a homeowner? Does everybody want to live in a house? There's probably many people that live in cities that they're fine with their apartment, or apartment life is something they prefer. So maybe address the tax code in order to provide some similarity to those who pay taxes on their mortgage to people that pay rent. You could do that, but not everybody needs to be in a house. Not everybody needs to go to college. Some people can go to trade schools. Some people can go to community colleges, or some people can go to state schools or private schools or whatnot. I mean, not everybody needs to do what is said to be successful, and there are many people, at least in the profession that I'm in, that went to school for majors very different than the field they're working in, or didn't actually go to college at all and are tremendous professionals. They just learned the trade itself. So we got healthcare, we got college, we got homeownership, healthcare. I think everybody wants to be able to, if they do get injured, to go to the emergency room and not worry about being devastated in debt, maybe losing their house or having to sell their car or just being decimated in their savings by going to the hospital when, say, an accident happens and they need assistance. That makes 100% sense, 100%. But there are some people that would like concierge service from their doctor, would like something slightly different or more than a basic option. So it makes sense to me that we want everybody to, in America, to be able to get emergency health care or assistance in with chronic conditions. That makes sense. I don't think anybody really argues with that. It's the question of how is that going to get done, and a lot of the answers kind of seem wanting from a lot of politicians. They say we're gonna do it. Well, how? I don't know. It's troubling how people can just say things and people can get motivated and say yes, they're gonna do it, and there's grand promises that people make sometimes. I would just wonder or ask either the voter or even the individual, if somebody comes to you and they ask you or they tell you they're going to do something phenomenal, they're going to do something incredible, ask them why, like, what's the problem, what's the actual issue. One candidate said, if you elect me, I'm going to ensure that, you know, we cure cancer. That's a little bit of a overpromise. I'm not sure if that candidate is going to be able to deliver on that, and it just almost seems disrespectful for the people that have been working decades in order to cure cancer to say that the conditions are totally going to change if you put them in office. The problem with cancer is obvious. Cancer is terrible, but the problems with other things are maybe not so clear. To go back to the prison question, if the majority of people in prison are there because they're violent offenders, and we still want 50% of the people out of prison, we should be able to ask, okay, who are those people? Who are those individuals? There's a lot of debate going on right now about immigration and immigration reform. You know, we want everybody in. For some individuals, opinion, some Americans are kind of more open borders when it comes to that, and some people say we don't want anybody in, or we want some people in, but we only want the good ones. What are the good ones? You need a criteria for who are the good ones. And that's, I don't want to say problematic, because that the word problematic is fairly overused, but if you are going to limit the number, or say there is a number that we're going to accept for, say, for example, immigration, we should be able to maybe try to stick to that number. And then if we only want to have, I don't know, 2 million people come into the country each year from any country, then is there a quota system? Is there a, we want to accept 300,000 from South America, we want 400,000 from the continent of Africa, we want this many, or it doesn't matter where they come from, they have to have these credentials, or they have to pass this test. And other things, like if you have a plan to change or adapt something, then there needs to be clear guidelines on what that means. So again, to return to the prison thing, I want to reduce the number of people in prison, so I have 50%. Why not 100%? I mean, don't you want everybody to have liberty? Don't you want everybody to have served their time and be back in the streets to be participating citizens? No, that can't be, because some people belong in prison. Okay, who are those people? Who, if you get 10 people and you want 5 to go home and 5 to stay, what are the conditions of the crimes that they have committed that require them to stay in their cages longer or forever? And what are the conditions in which people can go home? And if those conditions shouldn't be ad hoc. You shouldn't look at those 10 people, pick 5 that meet an arbitrary criteria, and then send them home. You shouldn't say, well, we've got 6 people up there that have committed murder, but one of those people that committed murder took pictures of it. So that's a little bit sicker of a murderer. He murdered more. He was more of a murderer. So that one person stays, and those other five people, murderers, get to go home. You should be able to make the criteria before assigning those individuals are going to be. And it's just how people make these grand statements sometimes is a little frustrating. There was another politician a number of years ago that I remember saying that they were not going to let the national debt go up 1 cent. I thought, it's not going to happen, man. It's not going to happen at all. That's, and people were really excited by it. Like, he can deliver, he can do it. It's not going to happen. And surprise, surprise, it didn't happen. It's not important which politician that is, because any politician can say that, and it's not going to be the case unless something insane happens to how we spend money in the country. But there's too many promises made by politicians or even in other walks of life where it needs to be understood what is the problem we're trying to solve. Is it in fact a problem? So I guess Heather McDonald would say we don't have really that much of a problem with the prison system as far as who is in prison, because the people that are in prison belong in prison, but we should make efforts to, you know, allow people in the outside of prison to make better decisions so that they don't go into prison. Nobody's for people going to prison. Everybody would hope that people wouldn't do the crimes that lead them to enter prison. But just because there is a number, and just because our number is bigger, doesn't necessarily mean that that's a bad thing. It could be a bad thing if 9 out of 10 of people that are in prison aren't for jaywalking, and then we can have a discussion of, okay, why the heck are the majority of people in prison for nonviolent crimes or for laws that we don't even think should even be illegal? But we have to look at kind of the actual facts of the situation and assess that. So for these show notes, I'm going to include the debate from Heather McDowell and Thaddeus Russell from the Unregistered podcast. There's a YouTube video that had the debate. And I'm not going to really include, I think, the political statements by some of the politicians currently, because heck, a month from now they might change their mind and say that maybe they were a little too motivated to change criminal reform. That, you know, as elections get closer, you got to thread the needle between trying to be an angel and help people that are in prison, but also you have to, for some voters, show that you're tough on crime. So I guess very, very good politicians are able to walk that line and to let people know that they will put everybody who's a bad person in prison, and all the people that aren't bad people, that he's going to get them out, or she's going to get them out of prison. It's a little tiresome hearing promises that seem pretty outrageous and seem kind of like the questions aren't even asked. Is this a problem to begin with? Is this even an issue that we need to be up in arms about? I think there needs to be kind of a question of what is the limit, or what is the amount of some situation in society that we're upset about. So if everybody is, if for example, right now we have a very low unemployment rate, is it reasonable to say that everybody needs a job, and that 3% or 3.5% or whatever the number is currently is too high of a number when it's the lowest number we've ever had, and there are actual economic issues with full unemployment, oversaturation? Listen to a thing recently about, from, I think it was Planet Money, this is the indicator, talking about how Japan has an issue where they have too many, their economy is in the tank because unemployment is too low, that too many people are in the days a week should you work? What are the hours? A huge debate right now is whether somebody in what would have originally been viewed as a part-time job for a younger individual, an entry-level job, should be able to earn a living wage off that job and support their family with that job, which it's a really weird debate. But maybe we could talk about that another day. This one's probably gone long enough. I don't really know what this one was about. This one was about over-promising, making weird problems, and maybe not thinking about the problems you're trying to solve or problems really to begin with. So there's too many people in prison. Is that true? I don't know. I could scrounge up some statistics and throw them up and say, you know, actually, no, we're the people that are in prison should be in prison. Or, you know, more people need to be homeowners. Is that true? Maybe we could just change the tax code. There are not enough people in college. Well, I don't know. I mean, going to college seems like it's the surest way to get to a ton of debt right now. Maybe that's not ideal for some majors or some people. And maybe some people that go to college and, you know, leave after 3 years and don't get their degree and still have that debt, maybe that was not a good decision for them. Maybe they could have done a different program or opened a small business or done anything else. Not everything has to be black and white for a lot of policies. There's a difference in ability and talent and desires and incentives that, you know, different people work off of. So it might not be great to make grand pronouncements about how things should be and how we need to move tremendous amounts of people and capital and energy towards one direction if some people don't need to, want to, or can go in that direction. So I think that's something to consider for all of my tremendous listeners out there. When they have solutions, maybe think about what is the actual problem, and if their solution really maybe addresses the problem that they're trying to fix, or if it's just kind of a utopian ideal. I have no idea what the show notes are going to look like for this one. They're probably going to be all over the place. Before we close up, I'm going to say we are now, specifically this podcast, is available on 8 different platforms, including Stitcher and Apple Podcast. Haven't gotten the white whale yet. Haven't gotten Spotify. Still closing on that, seeing what requirements I need to do to allow that. And what else is going on? Haven't gotten the microphone yet. Did get a sound editing software, so hopefully I go back and tune up the audio from the previous podcast and make them a little easier, do some compression on it to get rid of the highs and lows on the audio files. And got new podcast art this week off of Fiverr. So got that, got the new art, gonna get a microphone pretty soon. Got the software, might get a different software to help clean things up and just kind of make this a little bit better. Again, if you want to follow the podcast on Twitter, it's 400 Thoughts at 400 Thoughts. Or if you want to send an email, have any questions, suggestions, if you have your own podcast or know of good audio equipment, where to buy it, what's the good stuff to get, what's the products or brands to avoid, you can email me at 400thoughts.thedriver@gmail.com. Again, that's 400thoughts.thedriver@gmail.com. Again, Twitter is at 400 Thoughts. Please tell your friends about the podcast, or not, because it's not completely polished. But hope everybody has a great weekend, and I will see you next Friday.